There is no way in the world that we would be able to really declare the greatness of God. And having said that, this is apart from my message, by the way, I want to suggest something to you. And that is this. God never needs defending. And God never needs explaining. And the reason that's true is because God is sovereign. And you will never be able to understand why He's doing what He's doing. And nor will you be able to defend Him adequately without really making a mess of it. When God said, "My ways are not your ways, nor are my thoughts your thoughts. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts." He's telling you something. He's telling you something. I look at the book of Acts in chapter 12. And in Acts chapter 12, you find the death of James. Herod puts James to death. A few verses later, you find Peter's imprisoned with full intentions of killing Peter. God intervenes. Peter's set free. Did you ever ask the question, "God, why is it that you intervened with Peter, but you never intervened with James?" Have you ever wondered that? Let me suggest three words that you get used to using when it comes to trying to explaining God or trying to defend God. I don't know. Someone asked me, why did James die and Peter didn't? My answer, I have no idea. Because, you see, God is sovereign, and God will do what God sees best. So why does God intervene in some people's lives and not in others? I don't know. And I'm not even going to try and figure it out. Okay, that's a freebie. Now, I know when you got your outline, you looked at it, and it was a pretty full page. But I assured Terry that we would be done with it before the end of the year. You won't be here that long. All right? When I was preparing this message, I was reminded of a song that Doris Day made popular decades ago. And if you're younger than me, then you probably don't know anything about it. But the song was very popular. Que sera, sera. Whatever will be, will be. Remember that? Some of you, yeah. That means you're as old as I am. But you remember the questions that she asked? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich? She asked her sweetheart, "Will we have rainbows day after day?" And then her children asked her, "Will I be handsome? Will I be rich?" And the answer is always the same. Que sera, sera. Whatever will be, will be. So what will 2018 be? It will be whatever it will be. There are just some things that you cannot have any control over. And Solomon said this in Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 15. He said, "That which is crooked cannot be made straight. That which is lacking cannot be filled up." And he's saying that there's just some things in life you're not going to be able to control. There's just some things in life you're just going to have to accept because you have no control over them. Now, if you have control issues, that might bother you. But again, you see, there's just some things that are just beyond your ability to be able to deal anything with. So, it's just whatever is, is. I heard an editor or a columnist from the Wall Street Journal. He said the most hated word in America, in the vocabulary of America, and he said it's been at the top of the list for the last 9 years. The one word hated by everybody is the word whatever. And you know, whatever. Well, that, you realize how that's just nothing? So, when it comes to 2018, whatever. I have nothing to offer you in regards to what's going to take place in 2018, except this one thing, Donald Trump will tweet. As we do look ahead, though, we need to understand that there are things that are out of our control, but there are some things that are in our control. There are things that you and I can deal with and can make life a little better for us. In the letter to the Ephesians, the Apostle Paul writes this letter from his prison cell in Rome. And you can divide it into two divisions. The first part, chapters 1 through 3, deals with the doctrinal issues, all the things that God has blessed us with, how God has broke down the middle wall of partitions, made it possible for Gentiles and Jews to be united together in the one kingdom, and then the gloriousness of the church. And then in chapters 4 through 6, he says this is how you're to live out your faith. In verses 25 to 32 of chapter 4, Paul gives us some attitudes that will enable us to have a very positive and fulfilled 2018. He begins by saying, therefore. He uses that term twice. He uses it here and he uses it in verse 17. And he says, therefore, in verse 25, each of you must put off. The term put off literally means you take a garment off. You go to bed at night, you take your clothes off, and you go to bed. That's the word that he's using here. You put these things off. You put them away. You get rid of them. I'd like to turn those things a little bit into a more positive thought. And for these next five things that I want to talk about, I want to talk about them pretty quickly. And I believe there are keys to having a living the abundant life that Jesus said that He came to give. I think it's unfortunate that there are far too many Christians today that are really not enjoying life. If you're a child of God, you ought to be enjoying life. You should be living it to the fullest. Because Jesus said, I came that they might have life and have it to its fullest. And so you should be living the abundant life. You should be enjoying life. And I understand that there are circumstances out there, situations and what have you, but in spite of those things, you are to be living the abundant life. Because that's what Jesus brought. And so the first thing I want to suggest is that we be honest. Speak the truth, he says. Now this should be a given. It's part of being a disciple. No one who is dishonest can fully appreciate their faith or life itself. People who are dishonest, you don't like being around. You just kind of, whenever they speak, you just kind of, well, you know, you take it with a grain of salt. Consider the source. You heard those phrases, you probably have used them yourself. But what Paul is saying here is that you be honest. You be an honest person. Honest in business. If there's no honesty, there's no business, because eventually people are going to realize that you've been ripping them off. people are going to finally come to the conclusion, you know, this something here is wrong. Because this person that I've trusted no longer can I trust. And so I don't want to do business with that kind of person anymore. Honesty in relationships. He says we are members one of another. And in your honesty, in your relationships, that means you need to be honest with yourself. I am not too surprised when I run across people who can look at others and talk about the imperfections in their life and yet not recognize the imperfections in their own life. Does that strike you as odd? Remember what Jesus said, judge not that you be not judged. For in the same measure that you judge others, you'll be judged yourself. Why do you try to take the splinter out of your brother's eye while you've got the log sitting in your own? I'm convinced that a lot of people go through life not really knowing themselves. And they're not being honest with themselves. Now, if you have a trouble being honest with yourself, ask someone else to be honest with you. Now, that might be uncomfortable, but if you're really wanting to make the changes in your life that you know are to be made, then you need to sit down with someone who will be honest with you. Try your spouse. They have a tendency to be honest with you. Someone that really cares for you. And we need to look at ourselves seriously and judge ourselves seriously according to Scripture. And when you read the Scriptures, ask God to expose yourself to yourself. God, what is it about me that needs to change? God, what is it about me that you do not like? Let me see it. And then show me the direction to get it out of my life. We need to be honest in all of life. Charles Krauthammer once quoted somebody, and I didn't get the name of the person that he quoted. But he said, I prefer to tell the truth because it is easier to remember. It is, isn't it? It is easier to remember the truth. And if we just recognize that, then it's just be honest. Don't, and by the way, don't tell the truth as you see it. Tell the truth as it is. Tell the truth as it is. Tell the truth on your taxes. And even though that's a difficulty sometimes, and if you have a problem with it, let someone else do them for you. Honesty on your taxes. Tell the truth on your taxes. And it was Jesus who said, and that's one of the things I'm so thankful Matthew did. Matthew gave us a Sermon on the Mount. Mark, Luke, and John did not. But in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said, say what you mean and mean what you say. And he said it this way, let your conversation be yea, yea, and nay, nay. That means you say what you mean and mean what you say. Don't beat around the bush. Don't try to fuzz the thing or anything else. Just be honest about it. Tell the truth. Secondly, be peaceful. Be peaceful. Righteous anger is commendable. In Mark chapter 3 and verse 5, Jesus saw something he didn't like, and the Bible says that he became angry. There is good, righteous indignation, and I'd like to see more of it. But deep-seated anger is a product of someone's life. For some reason, they feel cheated, they feel robbed, they feel mistreated in some way. And they're angry. And they go through life being angry. And they may have been mistreated. They may have been cheated. They may have been done something, somebody may have done something to them that really did give them heartache and what have you. And maybe they robbed them of something. But the longer you hang on to your anger, and the more it continues to fester, the more it becomes a poison that little by little destroys you. Be angry, but don't let it fester. Be a peaceful person. If you're peaceful, it will bring glory to God. It was Jesus who said, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God." God puts a high premium on people who are peaceful individuals. Not angry people, but on peaceful people. People who will work to bring peace. Being peaceful will defeat Satan. Satan uses anger, and he knows how to use it well. And he will defeat you with it. If you don't deal with it, it will diffuse the situation. Remember, it was the proverb writer said in Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 1, "A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger." And if you need any proof of that, just look at the last 12 months of Donald Trump as he tweeted against the news media. And this thing is going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. I got an idea if he would just shut up, it would all end. Or if he'd be complimentary, it might end. We need to be people of peace. It will also enhance your testimony. People are impressed when you are a person of peace. And they want to know, why are you not so angry about something or another? Why is it that you seem to be able just to pass over some of these things? When the Spirit is working in you, you can be at peace. Did you get that? If the Spirit is working in you, you can be at peace. Because when the Spirit is working in you, that's what He's wanting you to do. He is wanting to make sure you're a person of peace. Isn't the peace also part of the fruit of the Spirit? Galatians 5. For the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace. Be a person of peace. Be generous. It was Jesus who said it is more blessed to give than to receive, Acts 20 and verse 35. And I submit to you, you can never be too generous. You really can't. Be generous with your time. Several years ago, a radio host made this statement. It was in Los Angeles, I believe it was. He made this statement: "Send me $5 and I'll listen to anything and everything you have to say." It wasn't long until he had to come back on the radio and say, "Quit sending me the money." See, people were just wanting someone to listen, and they'd be willing to pay the $5 just to have someone listen to what they have to say. People need someone who will take the time to hear them. They do not need advice. They don't need counsel. They need your silence and your ear and your attention. Someone referred to counselors as buying a friend for 1 hour. And I think that's true. That's what you're doing when you go to a counselor. You're paying whatever it is cost. But you're paying for a friend. Someone who will just listen. And listen, they don't need counsel. They don't need your advice. When someone comes to you and they're burdened with something, let them just talk it out. Pray with them. And maybe a little bit later you might want to say, you know, you came to me and talked to me about this kind of thing. How's it going for you? And then listen again. You know, we're just too quick to give advice. We're just too quick to give counsel. And that's not what people want. And I might add, that's not what they need. They just need to unload. And isn't it great when you've got a friend who sends up to you and say, you know, I just need to unload. And they just unload. You don't just unload with just anybody. You unload with someone that you care really a lot about. Because you know they'll listen to you. Be generous with your blessings. God has given you everything for His glory. You know this, but let me just remind you of it. The house that you live in, the money that's in your account, the cars that you drive, the clothes that's on your back, the job that you have, doesn't belong to you. God has given them to you, but they all belong to God. And the question is, are you using it to His glory? Or are you being selfish? Be generous with your blessings. Share with others is something that God expects. 1 John 3 and verse 17. Share the blessings. You share the blessings, and God will just keep giving them to you. Happens every time. Be generous with your talents. Now, I know I've been the beneficiary of others' talents. There's one thing I cannot do. Well, there's a lot of things I cannot do. I don't know how many times I've had to call Terry. Hey, Terry, I got something wrong with my truck here. Would you mind stopping by? And Terry stops by. I'm a recipient of Terry's talent. I've been recipients of others' talents in this congregation. I'm blessed. And we need to take our talents and give them to others. You want to repay, but there's not any amount that can make up for the time spent helping someone. And as you've been the recipient of someone else's talent, you need to pass it on. Pass on the blessings. And always remember, it is more blessed to give than to receive. And how many times has someone said, I don't need any help. No, I don't need it. No, I'm fine. I can do without. You know what you're saying when you say that? You think, I'll keep the blessings to myself. See, it's more blessed to give than to receive. But if you can't, if there's nobody that's going to receive, you can't give. So we need to be more of a receiving. And let other people enjoy the blessings. Be gentle. Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth. Watch what you say. Nothing demonstrates gentleness more than words. Sometimes it's just good business to say nothing. You know, Solomon once made the statement in the book of Ecclesiastes, there's a time to speak and a time to be silent. I remember one time Deanne got upset with me, more than one time, but she got and she unloaded. And she said, are you going to say anything? I said, well, Not right now. What she said was true, you know. So, no, not right now. See, there are just times when you just need to probably just take it in and let it go. Don't try to defend anything. Don't try to make excuses. Just, no, I think I'll just let it go for now. You see, there's always another opportunity to say what you want to say. When that'll give you a chance to really realize you don't want to say what you want to say. But words encourage. You know, there are just some people that know how to just encourage others with words. You love somebody, you be around somebody who can actually take you and say things to you that encourage you and not discourage you. Words heal. Use words that heal. And there's a lot of brokenness in our world, and there needs to be some healing. Use words that instruct rather than demean. And use words that comfort, that give comfort. And finally, be forgiving. There's nothing more important in retaining relationships than being a forgiving person. And I know that sometimes can be pretty hard when we feel like we've been wronged. When someone has said something, someone has done something, whatever, and has caused us a lot of pain. And Jesus calls on us to be forgiving. But if we don't forgive, it eventually turns into bitterness. Bitterness turns into hatred. Hatred gives room to resentment. I really want to encourage you that if a relationship with somebody means anything to you at all, be forgiving. And I recognize, you know, we can say, well, this relationship means more to me than anything else, so I'm willing to forgive. But let me also say, forgiveness is essential for you to have forgiveness. If you're not willing to forgive, then let me be so bold as to say this. Don't waste your time asking God for forgiveness, because He's not going to give it. He's already said that. If you're not willing to forgive one another, there will be no forgiveness with God. I don't know of any teaching that Jesus was more clear on than that one. And we need to put aside all that stuff that is so hateful. Because you see, forgiveness guards against bitterness. And forgiveness also guards against hateful speech. And when we can forgive, then we're recognizing how much we appreciate our own forgiveness. Someone says, well, I've forgiven. Really? I'm not bitter. Really? Then why are you acting like you are? Why are you acting so angry? What is your problem? One of my favorite movies is Seabiscuit. For obvious reasons, I guess. But I remember this jockey was in a race, and another jockey had bumped up against him in Seabiscuit. And he took off. And this guy grabbed hold of, let Seabiscuit go and race up to catch up with him. And he lost the race. And when the race was over, the trainer comes out and he says, "What in the world do you think you're doing?" And he said, "You don't expect me to step back and just let this guy do what he did, do you?" And I love what the owner of Seabiscuit said. He walked up to his jockey and he said, "What are you so angry about?" You see, the reason why the guy did what he did is because he's already angry about something else. And when you're angry about something else, there's no holds barred on what people do. And so I encourage you, be forgiving. Be forgiving. Be forgiving because you've been forgiven. Individually, the New Year's greatness is dependent upon us having right attitudes. So I want to encourage you to be honest, to be peaceful, to be generous, to be gentle, and be forgiving. And when you do, then that which Jesus brought to this world, that abundant life, it will be yours to enjoy. And I encourage you this morning to take a good look inwardly at yourself. Because, see, you cannot change others. The only person you can change is you. You're responsible for you. And so I encourage you to pray about it. Let God's Spirit work in you. And I want to encourage you, don't ignore that. Focus on your life with God, and the new life will be yours. I don't know where you are today in your life with God, but I do know this. The new year is ahead of you, and there's no time like the present to start fresh with Him. If there's some way we can assist you, I pray you'll come while we stand and sing.